Send me a postcard, drop me a line, stating point of view. Indicate precisely what you mean to say. You're sincerely wasting away. Give me your answer, fill in a form, mine forevermore. Will you still need me? Will you still feed me?
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Max Rickman, who is a former staff director of the Senate Special Committee on Aging and a 16-year veteran of Capitol Hill. Currently, he's the president and CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, one of the nation's most influential senior advocacy and education membership organizations. Today, he wrote a letter to President Obama about his pledges regarding Social Security that have been contradicted by statements made in recent months that both the chain CPI and Medicare means testing remain a part of his deficit reduction proposal. Welcome to Background Briefing, Max Rickman.
Well, thank you, Ian, for inviting me.
Now, not just the president, of course, but House Majority Leader Nancy Pelosi have said they're open to suggesting that Medicare be means tested and Social Security payments be reduced by applying a lower adjustment for inflation. Now, that's the chain CPI. Why are they rolling over in a negotiation preemptively? I mean, it sort of reminds me of what happened in the very beginning of the Obama administration over the long and bitterly fought so-called Obamacare. So I don't get that as a negotiating tactic.
Well, you're not alone in not getting it as a negotiating technique. But what in meetings I've had, just I had one Tuesday night at the White House, I know that I've been reading today that Leader Pelosi, in essence, stated that the chain CPI would be in a grand bargain if the Republicans agreed to revenue increases. Now, they haven't agreed to that, and they keep saying they're not going to agree to it, but the White House and some Democrats have already given in on what they would give up. So I don't understand the merits of negotiating that way, and a lot of folks who are progressives are baffled by it as well. You know, we sent a letter to the White House today after a meeting on Tuesday where I was at the White House, where I stated as strongly as I could our opposition, hoping to convince the White House to back off of promoting the chain CPI, which, as you pointed out, will lower the cost of living adjustment for not just Social Security beneficiaries, but veterans benefits, the disabled. The money that they receive would be lower each year. And the COLA, cost of living adjustment, is compounded. So the amount they lose is going to grow and grow and grow. But the White House seemed pretty committed to pursuing that. Chain CPI. I've been hearing just today that the president, when he submits his budget next month, well, in a couple weeks, will include chain CPI. I asked that at the meeting, and I didn't get an answer. But the word is that it will be included. Now, maybe they'll back off in the president's budget. But he's been very upfront and clear that it's something he's willing to do. If I don't know if he believes it's the correct policy, he's willing to pursue it.
Well, the most charitable interpretation would be that he knows that the Republicans are just obdurate and basically controlled by the Tea Party lobby in the House, and that they'll refuse everything because they have this kind of irrational hatred of Obama. And that's, I think, the most charitable explanation, that he basically knows that they're not going to agree, so why not look like you're going the extra mile? But unfortunately, there's been a pattern here of rolling over and showing the soft underbelly. In effect, Republicans get rewarded more often than not in a kind of hostage-taking situation. So if you're saying that he has to give up core American values, this is not just the Democratic Party's centerpiece,
right.
Medicare and Social Security. These are very popular American programs. If he's going to give them up in order for the Republicans to agree to revenues, which they're flat out refusing to, so he's going to give up the fight on revenues. I am absolutely mystified why the Democrats don't recognize that the Republican position on deficits is completely contradictory, and that they have never gone after the absurd illogic of the Republican position over deficits. If you're going to make a case that the sky is falling because of deficits, then you are making a case for revenues. Why haven't they stuck to their guns on that?
Well, I think they've tried to pursue that line of thinking, but the flaw, I think, is what we've been talking about. They're willing to showing their cards at the very beginning of a negotiation and saying we're willing to give this up. Now, you were being charitable. That's right. What if you're wrong? What if there is some small concession and if the president is bluffing? What if his bluff is called and they do make some small concession? Then we are caving in on, as you accurately pointed out, a core value, not just of Democrats, but of Americans, which is our social insurance safety net. And, one thing I think I want to be really clear on, we're an organization that's committed to preserving Social Security and Medicare, not just for beneficiaries today, but for the future. And so we recognize this is a program that is modified over time. It's not the same program today in terms of the benefits that are provided and the revenue that's needed to provide them, as was true in 1935. So it's an evolving program. And what I have tried to make clear to the White House is whatever changes are made to Social Security should be made separate and apart from discussions about the fiscal cliff or the debt limit or budget matters that the Social Security program is not a part of. It has a surplus. It doesn't have a debt. It hasn't created this debt. And that would be the proper way to deal with long-term Social Security solvency and adequacy. That's the way it's been done in the past, in the early 80s. And it was a bipartisan effort. President Reagan, Speaker O'Neill worked out some changes that made the program solvent for 75 years for the sake of the program. It wasn't part of any larger negotiation on our debt limit or any other budget matters. And that's the way to approach it. Back then in 82 and 83, the solvency, according to the actuaries, was about 4 or 5 months before the program wouldn't be able to meet its obligation. Today, again, according to the actuaries, it's 22 years. 22 years. So we don't want to wait until the summer of that last year to try to make some changes that continue it on the trajectory that it was put on in the early 80s. But we don't have to correct it in the next 6 or 7 weeks. Under the kind of pressure that we'll find the program is being subjected to if it's part of this big grand deal.
But some of the corrections...
It was my understanding that the White House agreed with that approach. Now it seems to be that they don't.
Well, I was going to say, though, that some of the corrections that have been offered to Social Security to make it even stronger, for example, millionaires and billionaires pay the same Social Security tax as the lowest income people receiving Social Security. That's a simple adjustment to make. That's not on the table, which gets me back to the big question about why is it that we can't raise taxes on the rich, close all these loopholes, particularly the carried interest that hedge fund billionaires have, and not to mention repatriate the trillions of dollars that corporate America stashes offshore. There's so many other ways to raise revenue, and I guess you can say that the president's been trying to paint the Republicans into the corner because they seem to be so willingly such fealty to the millionaires and billionaires that they'll go to the mat every time for them and shut down the government. Maybe that's the better route than this preemptive caving in.
Well, if you raise a very good point, the current limit on wages subject to the payroll tax is 113,000, 113.7 is the current limit. So if you make 113.7 or you make 113 million, you're going to pay the same amount of tax on Social Security. You could solve almost all of the 75-year, and that's the goal of the actuary, 75-year solvency projections by eliminating the cap completely. So I don't hear anybody, I mean, the only person that's, people that are talking about it mostly are in our office here in Washington.
And Bernie Sanders, yeah.
And Bernie Sanders. And, right. Well, and I should say, and Bernie Sanders and Congressman Peter DeFazio of Oregon, he's talking about it. And there are a few members who are talking about it. And well, we need more. We need more of them to take that approach.
Well, as again, I'd say it would change the entire subject, and it would put the Republicans in the position where, once again, they'd have to show that they're either for the middle class or for the billionaires, and I just don't get it.
We know where that comes out.
Well, of course, but I don't know what other game you can play there. Tell me, Max Richman, again, former staff director of the Senate Special Committee on Aging and a 16-year veteran on Capitol Hill. Currently, he's the president and CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, one of the nation's most influential senior advocacy and education membership organizations. And today he wrote a letter to President Obama asking him about his pledges regarding Social Security and Medicare that appear to have been contradicted by he and Nancy Pelosi about chain CPI and Medicare means testing. So what do you think is the best tactic that they can use? The scary part about this is that if they went ahead and made this deal without telling anybody and it all was done in the small print in the middle of the night and then we all woke up and found out that we had a deal, a grand bargain, but it's going to cost us over the long run, then it's too late. It would seem to me that people in this country really care about these programs. Who's going to mobilize the Paul Revere's to...
Yeah. Well, Ian, we're doing as much as possible, and I'm grateful to you to give me the opportunity to continue playing Paul Revere on your radio show. And we're doing. I've done three interviews today already, and I'm doing another one in about an hour and a half. So we're doing what we can to get the message out. We are organizing our field activists around the country. We did the new Senator Angus King from Maine with thousands of petitions up in Augusta, Maine. I did a few weeks ago. About 10 days ago, I presented thousands of petitions to three members of Congress from Illinois at one event where they came together near O'Hare Airport. On a week from Monday, I'll be in Minneapolis with Congressman Keith Ellison at a large town meeting in the morning and another one in the afternoon and a few days later in Wisconsin with a freshman congressman, Pocan from Madison. So, and we have many more in the works all over the country and on the West Coast and in Florida. So the more members, and we're doing it in a very intensive way because this is all going to come to a head most likely in 2 or 3 months. So the more people know about it, the more I think that outrage they're going to be, because as you pointed out correctly, these programs have very strong bipartisan intergenerational support. And there's a huge disconnect between folks here in Washington who, whether it's at the White House or in the Congress, policymakers that are not in touch with what their constituents, American citizens, want them to do, and what their priorities should be. So we're using every vehicle possible to communicate to the public, to our members, to members of Congress. And you know, we faced the same thing when President Bush came out to a press conference the day after he was reelected, and I don't know if you followed it.
He said he had all that capital to spend and he was going to privatize Social Security, yeah.
I have all this political capital, and I'm going to use it to privatize Social Security. We were watching. We had no idea he was going to say that. And our staff was in our conference room watching his press conference, and we almost fell out of our chairs. We thought, oh my God, we got our work cut out for us, and we followed him around the country, and as he went holding his town hall meetings, and either in person or through the media, and we won. He never got very far with that, and thank God he didn't.
Well, just in closing, Max, just to get back to my point, though, that the Republicans have had a completely illogical position from day one on the deficits and the skies falling over the deficits. And recently, John Boehner agreed that deficits are not an immediate but a long-term problem. And
right.
So it seems like
exactly. It
seems like they're figuring out that they've dug a hole for themselves. That's what I don't understand, is why don't the Democrats make it clear that this whole argument is bogus?
Yeah. Well, I think the president is starting to do some of that. He did a few interviews where I think he was saying his priority is the economy and jobs and not necessarily to have a balanced budget within a set amount of time. But I would hope that he'd start focusing on how Social Security and Medicare and our safety net programs play in that equation.
Well, we can only hope
Well, we're doing more than hoping. All the things that I mentioned, we're
sure.
Going nonstop,
right.
and we have a very committed staff and a committed board of directors. So we're hoping, but we're acting as well.
Well, how do people get in touch with you and to join your ranks?
Well, they can contact us at our website, which is NCPSSM. That's our acronym, ncpssm.org, or call our toll-free number, 1-800-966-1935. The year Social Security was enacted, 1-800-966-1935. They get as much information as they could possibly absorb.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Max Rickman.
Thank you, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Max Rickman, who's a former staff director of the Senate Special Committee on Aging and a 16-year veteran on Capitol Hill. Currently, he's the president and CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, one of the nation's most influential senior advocacy and education membership organizations. Today, he wrote a letter to President Obama about his pledges regarding Social Security that have been contradicted by statements made in recent months that both the chain CPI and Medicare means testing are a part of the deficit reduction proposal. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again on Sunday at 11 a.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.